This is Finding Christ in Cinema. You have my permission to listen.
On this episode of Finding Christ in Cinema, we join Ulysses Everett McGill on his quest to look for Christian themes in O Brother, Where Art Thou? What is the true treasure that Everett, Pete, and Delmar are looking for? Will Everett really find his treasure? Or is he too busy insulting God? All that and more in 3, 2, 1. Come on in, admission is free. Grab a bowl of popcorn, extra butter, of course, and find a seat smack dab in the middle. It's time for Finding Christ in Cinema, episode number 125. I'm Michael.
And I'm Brendan.
Join us, and together we'll dig deeper into the silver screen classics of yesteryear, as well as the box office hits of today. We'll take a closer look at the stories they tell and see if we find the face of Jesus looking back. We're going to explore the deeper meanings of these films, their plots and their twists, the characters and their choices, and how we can relate them to the gospel of salvation, and ultimately our Christian walk. You're tuned into Finding Christ in Cinema on the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
They got this depression going on.
I got to do for me and mine.
Hey, Brendan, last week we talked about The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey. Mm-hmm. Finally.
It's where we should have started
exactly.
In the first place. Four years ago.
Yep, that was
four years ago.
Should have begun the entire Finding Christ in Cinema library, mm-hmm. so to speak. But we finally got around to it. We had a great time, had my son in the studio and everything. We'll talk a little bit more about why he was in the studio coming up later on in the show. But did you have any addendums or afterthoughts, anything you needed to talk? Oh, and another thing.
No.
Well, we want to encourage you, dear listeners, to get over to ChristInCinema.com and listen. If you haven't done so already, and if you have, do it again. Listen to The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey on Finding Christ in Cinema, episode number 124. But we're in a situation here.
In a tight spot.
What are we talking about today?
Oh, we're talking about the Coen brothers' epic film, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Are you ready to go to the theater?
I so am.
Here we are.
How's my little girl?
He ain't our daddy.
I am the only daddy you got. I am the damn paterfamilias.
Now mama's got a new boat.
Vernon here's got a job. Vernon's got prospects. He's bona fide. What are you?
You can't marry him.
I am and I will.
This gentleman bothering you?
Well, you can't marry my wife.
And stay out of the Woolworth.
To get back to his wife and kids, Ulysses Everett McGill will do anything.
Hey, any boy, Smithies.
But he's about to get off on the wrong track.
Who elected you leader of this outfit?
Well, Pete, I figured it should be the one with the capacity for abstract thought.
Boys, just stick with me.
Yeah, we're in a tight spot.
Believe me, I got a plan. And I can get my wife back and we can get out of here.
Okay, I'm with you fellas.
Introduce us, Pete.
I've seen him first.
Pete!
Them sirens loved him up and turned him into a horny toad.
You two are just dumb as a bag of hammers.
Allow me to introduce myself. Big Dan Tootcore.
Hey, what line of work are you, George?
Come and get me, Captain!
Oh, George, not the livestock.
Wait a minute. Since we've been following your lead, we got nothing but trouble.
You have eluded me for the last time.
I got the answers. I'm bona fide.
Maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger. My face you never see no more. But there is one problem.
You're gonna go far.
I'll meet you on God's golden shore.
You ever been with a woman?
I gotta get the family farm back before I can start thinking about that.
Yes!
the Coen brothers.
Yeah.
Absolute classic film, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Came out in the year 2000.
Yes.
And Brendan, why haven't we talked about this film sooner? Know.
I have no idea.
Okay, here's the deal.
Well, some of our listeners don't like musicals. So that's probably why.
Oh, it was for patron St. Philip's sake.
Mm-hmm,
see, Philip, we're looking out for you.
That's right.
Brother?
That's right. Oh, brother. Where aren't they?
Where aren't the musicals?
They're not on the list.
Here's my story with this film. When it came out, I didn't see it in the theater. In the theater, which is a recreation of the underworld scene in Homer's Odyssey, is my understanding. Anyhow, a friend of mine at work, and he and his wife came over to our house, and this was back in the days, Brendan. Movies used to come out on these big black things. And they had like this magnetic tape inside of them.
Were they shaped like rectangles?
They were called VHS tapes.
I think I remember
that. Yeah, and that's how I saw that. And we loved the film, and he actually got me a copy of it, my very own copy on VHS. But it was goofed up. It was a goofed up copy.
Mm.
And I never got around to replacing it. And when DVDs came out, I never got around to replacing that VHS. And then when Blu-rays came out, I never got around. It wasn't until a few months ago, or a couple months ago, when we saw that it was on Netflix and said, we need to put that on Patron St. Philip Presents The List! Like, right away, before it goes off of Netflix. And I was just taken back to that one time that I ever saw this film, and I loved it 100 times more. Recently, because now that I make sure that I watch films through Christian lenses, talk about the film. We could spend this whole hour just reciting lines and all that stuff. But
we pretty much have already.
Is this the Coen Brothers? Well, I know we don't like to rank things, but this is way up there.
It is way up there
on their output.
Yes. I just really enjoyed the film so much. Over Christmas break, had a couple weeks where I didn't have to go to school every day. This was one of the films I watched on repeat. Just because I hadn't seen it in
Pete
so long. Pete and repeat.
Yeah.
Well, Pete and Delmar.
Yeah, there you go.
But I never saw it when it came out. Thank you. I was only in fourth grade when it came out.
Your first point at the show. Fourth grade?
Yeah, fourth grade.
Oh!
Yeah.
Ageism. It took until, what's the date today? The 21st of January, 2017, before Brendan jumps right, he says, I'm not going to let January go by without getting some age jabs.
I got to remind the audience how much younger I am.
And remind the audience as you're getting closer to your microphone there, your can. Can you sing it to a can?
Sing it to my can there. Hey, you boys like that old timey stuff? Oh, they love it with the Pappy O'Daniel Flower Hour. Oh,
this is a great film.
I just love it. I love, now as a theater junkie, I like that this is a retelling of the Odyssey by Homer.
Yeah.
I love
Homer
this.
Simpson?
No. Homer Stokes.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Homer. This epic poem, the way that the Coen brothers have loosely adapted it.
Yes.
And hey, for as loosely as it is adapted, it fits pretty well.
Yep.
It's pretty interesting to look into all that, but just the chemistry that George Clooney, John Turturro, and Tim Blake Nelson have as Ulysses Everett McGill, Pete, is his last name Hogwallop too?
Yes, Hogwallop.
And then Delmar
O'Donnell.
Thank you.
Yes,
just those three characters, the boon companions.
Yeah.
as Pete says in the film. I love watching them go on this huge, epic journey of redemption.
Yes.
Well, do each of them find redemption?
Well, that's coming up in the next segment.
We'll talk about that later
yes.
on.
Yes. First, we're going to gush.
So, but yeah, we got to gush. And then setting that epic journey that's already familiar in the culture and context
of depression era
of the depression.
Yeah, the depression. They got that depression.
They got that depression going on. I got to do for me and mine. Yep. Judas Iscariot, Hogwallop, I'm gonna kill you.
Was that Ray McKinnon that did Vernon T. Waldrop?
No, that's
no.
The suitor.
Oh no. Oh yeah, that's
he's bona fide.
Yes, he is bona fide.
He's bona fide. He's a suitor.
Yep. Who did? I'm looking for a cousin. Where is he? I got to set up C4. full cast. I wish they would just go ahead and show us the full cast. Anyway, continue on. That's Wash Hog Wallop by Frank Collison. Excellent acting chops.
Hey, Wash, what's it been? About 20 years?
Every time he mentions Mrs. Hog Wallop, he sniffs.
He's got that.
And he's got them shifty eyes, won't look, you know.
You know, there's someone else in the media nowadays that has a sniffing problem. Anyway. No, I want to hear some more stuff from you. What do you like about it?
I'm predisposed because I love the 1930s.
Yeah.
I love the common people. I love folk. I love, yeah.
And this story is very folksy.
Yes. I love the visuals, everything about it. The countryside and, the sets and the of course, the wardrobe, and I really, really, really want that cap, that flat cap, that newsboy style cap that Everett was wearing, because that's a genuine 1930s version where it's extra poofy on top. Nowadays,
newsboys, as in God's Not Dead, like that newsboys.
Anyhow, but when you get to the story, I think that it's hard to put into words, because these three actors, as you already mentioned, work so seamlessly together that you really are not, I'm not dissecting the story. I'm going along for the ride.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Does that make any sense? I'm just carried along with these guys. And then when you pepper in these other actors, such as the guy who plays George Nelson, Babyface. Don't call me Babyface.
Don't call me Babyface.
And that's Michael Badalucco?
Sure. Or Badaluccio or something.
Yeah, but it depends on what it is.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the great Holly Hunter as... She is Penelope. She's called Penny, but she is Penelope, who is Odysseus's wife in the Odyssey. In this case, it would be the wife of Ulysses, which is the Latinized version of Odysseus?
Yes.
I do believe. But I want to back up. George Clooney.
Is he in the club? Is he in the menagerie?
No.
He is now.
And now I'm going to pay more attention to him. I have to admit, right here in front of you and God and everybody, I've always thought that George Clooney was popular because he's a strikingly handsome man.
He's a heartthrob.
Yes, he is a very handsome man.
Well, he was on ER.
I don't watch TV. I haven't watched TV in decades.
You don't even watch Seinfeld.
So. No, so I don't know anything about TV stuff. But his acting chops in this, his comedic timing.
Yeah.
And his character tics.
Yeah.
That whole always got his eyebrows raised and his upper lip pulled up, his teeth showing. He's just like, and just real jerky and, herky jerky, I should say. Not jerky as in, he's a little bit of a jerk.
Isn't there even his like physical obsession with the pomade?
Yes.
With Dapper Dan.
Those character tics, again, let's refresh listeners' memories about when we say character tics, what are we talking about?
We're just talking about things that the actor does to enliven the character that he's portraying, that he or she is portraying.
To make that a real person, a unique individual.
It's almost like they're trying to do that to make us as the audience say, hey, I know people that have that tic too. That's a real life thing. They're emulating real life. It endears us to the story.
Yes.
It endears us to the
character.
Storytelling.
Oh, there you go.
To the event of storytelling. That
it draws us in because it humanizes. And again, when we relatability.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Right? Even if it's not something that we know somebody that's like that.
That
reminds me of so-and-so.
That's right.
That's exactly how so-and-so does that. But I have to give my biggest shout out to me, the star of the movie, and this is just my opinion, in my humble opinion, dear listeners, Tim Blake Nelson as Delmar O'Donnell.
Mm-hmm.
I only know him, Brendan, that I can recall from the Hulk movie starring Edward Norton, and Liv Tyler's in there. We haven't got to that. We're putting it on Patron St. Philip Presents The List! And we will get to that a little bit later on in the year. However, Oh, yeah. So I only know him as the Abomination or whatever that character was. And he did a great job in that. I remember watching him. I don't know who this guy is, but I like, well, I did know who he was because I had seen Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou before.
That's right.
His, he is Delmar O'Donnell. And I'm watching Delmar and go, that is a real guy. Yeah. They really got a Delmar and brought him in here. It was just excellent. And the story behind how he got the job, he was a next-door neighbor of one of the Coen brothers.
Really?
And they came to him and said, we want you to read the script. Well, he thought, he's an educated man, Tim Blake Nelson, highly educated. And so he thought, oh, they want me to read through the script in order to see if there's anything that, you know, needs to be corrected or anything like script doctoring, I guess. I don't know.
Right, yeah. Or just consulting.
Yes. Or just, hey, we thought you may be interested in reading. This is our new project. He didn't realize that they wanted him to read for the part.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
And he was, you know, incredibly humbled by that. I think we may have mentioned that on a previous episode. Some part, but anyway, he's a very humble man, and he is one of those kind of people that likes to say nice things about people. He's not going to point out what's bad about people. He's going to lift up elevate the good points,
yeah,
which is something that we can all learn something from. But anyway, Tim Blake Nelson, big star of this movie for me, along with everybody else. Great cast. Who else needs shout outs?
Well, let's get Pete.
Oh, yes.
John Turturro.
And I'm not really familiar with him, but...
I am vaguely through Mr. Deeds, the Adam Sandler remake of Mr. Deeds Goes to Town, and a few other things, but not a lot of other things. He's very good at you know, what's called character acting.
Yes.
You know, he can take on those really hyperactive character tics, like we just talked about, and then use them to again, implement a construct of a real person on the screen.
What about
it's very magnetic.
What about FCC's very own John Goodman?
Hey.
As Big Dan Teague.
Oh. Big Dan.
or as people surmise, he is the Cyclops from The Odyssey.
And yeah, he is, because he's got the eye patch.
Yes.
And he takes Everett and
takes him for a ride.
Takes him for a ride.
But I love that
for this advanced tutorial.
That initial reaction, interaction between John Goodman and George Clooney
in the restaurant.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then, but it's even better because George Clooney's character Everett, Big Dan Teague, is beating the snot out of Delmar.
He's like, I don't get it, Big Dan.
Yeah. What's going on?
I don't get it.
What's going on?
Oh, and thank you for the conversational hiatus. I don't like to conversate while I'm during gustation.
Why is
this? I find
this,
it coarse and vulgar.
Why is this so funny? Why is this movie so funny?
I don't know. I think it's playing, for us, I think it's playing to a particular culture that we've grown up in.
Yeah. That we recognize.
And it's showing it warts and all.
Yeah.
And we like seeing those warts.
Yeah.
So,
but why though? Is there something psychological about that? Is there something? I mean, that's obviously factors into storytelling.
I'm no Freud, so I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, well, Freud's no Freud either. Anyhow, what about Holly Hunter as Penelope?
I wish she was there more.
I know,
you know, because she had a good role and she was doing it well.
She is such a confident actress.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's bona fide.
She is bona fide. Can we incorporate that into FCC from now on?
We're just going to make that part of it.
Okay, Pappy O'Daniel.
Oh, gosh. Pappy O'Daniel, such a foul mouth.
A foul human being.
Character. But so fun to watch.
Such a politician.
So fun to watch.
Yes.
We can't run in for him on an incumbent. We can't get our own midget looking like a bunch of Johnny Come Latelys.
Oh, good.
You may as well go ahead and start drafting my concession speech.
All right.
Okay, Pappy. He's so serious. Okay, Pappy.
Speaking of character tics, and really, to me, one of the greatest examples in this film is one particular exchange. But in general, this character of the radio station man. Okay. Played by Stephen Root. And Stephen Root, you know, I mean, you know what? He really, in this picture, his profile picture on IMDb, I got to tell you, he is almost a spitting image of patron saint Ron of the Red Oaks.
Really?
Yeah, it makes me think. Oh.
Hey, wait, where are we going?
Oh, that feels good.
Where are we going?
Potatoes.
Ah.
He does. He looks like he should be sitting in the red oak treehouse right now. It says one of the most prolific character actors working today, Stephen Root, worked along many of the biggest names in Hollywood. But he was in that's why he was in Office Space. He's the guy with the stapler. He's Milton. Oh. Wow. Oh, and
I think I found that picture you're talking about. Hold on, let me pull it up here.
And of course, he's Bill on King of the Hill. Well, I don't know. Yeah. Anyway.
What? Is that it?
That is. Well, that's not the picture on IMDb now. But anyway. Well,
that looks like Ron.
Okay, so that, and what the scene that I'm talking about is when this guy comes in, and I don't even know exactly what he is. I guess he's a record label producer, man.
Yeah.
And he comes in, and he wants to find them Soggy Bottom Boys.
Yeah.
And
the whole dang Steve's gone, yeah. Baby.
If you watch Stephen Root in that whole interchange, the character ticks that he employs, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously the big one, you know, I don't know if he's half legally blind, you know, that kind of thing. So he's doing stuff with his eyes, which I tried doing. That's hard.
That is hard.
That's not easy to do.
To maintain that.
Yeah. And pull off, you know, and say your lines and do it naturally. But anyway,
But there's that one motion that you talked about.
Where he's just doing this little thing with his hand.
It's like a little circular motion. Yeah. I think it's him expressing a way of saying, hey, I'm about to get some money.
Yeah, it's expressing something.
I'm waiting for that
money. That's what I really like. And so anybody out there that's in theater or acting, I want you to, you know, to focus in on that interchange with him and just see, wow, you know, he figured that this is the way that this character acts and behaves and does things. It's just some great stuff. Such a fantastic cast. Such a mind-blowing movie, really. I'm so mm-hmm. glad that we, you know, and that smell of bacon that's wafting through the studio right now.
I thought I was going
really,
crazy.
It's really just,
I thought your bacon ball made it explode.
Yeah, it's no, that was my. I'm a Dapper Dan man.
There you go.
Oh, I like that guy, that store owner. Did they pull him off the street or something?
I don't know.
Here's your pomade. Watch your language.
Well, this is a family establishment.
This is a public establishment.
Now, look, if you want Dapper Dan, I can have it ordered. Be here in 2 weeks. Well,
ain't
this place a geographical oddity? Two weeks from anywhere.
I'm a Dapper Dan man.
Don't
All right, I'll take 12 hair nets.
Try to find a decent
just
hair
just a
jelly.
Great feel. Okay.
Oh, man.
We can't do any more shout-outs. We'll just keep going on and on and on.
We'll ramble.
Here's the... What's new? Here's the question, though. Are there Christian themes in this film?
Oh, I think so.
You do?
I think so.
I do, too.
They're present. However, I would say, as we've already talked about before the mics, some characters just don't get it.
Yeah.
In the end.
Yeah. And so this is one of those, you know, normally we pull out the positive.
Yeah.
In films. And this is going to be one of those ones where we have to say, see what he's doing?
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
That's the wrong way of doing.
Mm-hmm.
So who wants to start off first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
I'll go ahead and go first. I'm actually going to start with the key passage.
Okay.
For my point. Matthew 6, 19 through 21 out of the ESV.
ESV.
Out of the ESV.
Yes.
Yes. No, not the net, not the nilt, the ESV.
Not the hairnet. I'm a Dapper Dan man.
And we all know this. This is part of the Sermon on the Mount. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Michael, this film is about three guys on the quest for a treasure.
Yeah.
And actually, you know what? I hate to encroach upon your sound clip.
By all means.
But I love listening to the prophet explain what this quest is going to be like.
Mind if we join you, old-timer?
Join me, my son. Join.
You work for the railroad, Grandpa?
I work for no man.
Got a name, do you?
I have no name.
Well, that right there may be the reason you've had difficulty finding gainful employment. You see, in the mart of competitive commerce...
You seek a great fortune. You three who are nigh in chain, you will find a fortune. Though it will not be the fortune you seek, But first you must travel a long and difficult road. A road fraught with peril. Mm-hmm. You shall see things wonderful to tell. You shall see a cow on the roof of a cotton house. And oh, so many starlings. I cannot tell you how long this road shall be, but fear not the obstacles in your path, for fate has vouchsafed your reward. Though the road may wind, yea, your hearts grow weary, still shall ye follow the road, even unto your salvation.
Hey, because that's the ultimate goal, right? Salvation?
I would think so.
Yeah. And something that that struck me just listening to it now, he says, and, you know, do not fear the obstacles in your path, for fate has vouchsafed your reward. You are promised this. This is guaranteed unto you.
You got a receipt to pick this up.
Yes, yes. And it's very interesting to think about this treasure that they're looking for. Of course, it's a physical treasure. The story that Everett sells is that he knocked over not the Piggly Wiggly. That was Delmar. He knocked over a banking truck.
I don't remember that part.
Something that had a lot of money in it.
Why would a baker have that kind of money?
Like a money transfer to a bank. Like,
the Wells Fargo Express?
Yeah, something like that. All right. Something akin to that. But we have this discussion throughout the film, this conflict, this thematic conflict of physical treasure and abstract treasure. And there's this scene, this wonderful scene, I think, at a campfire. The boys, you know, they're on the run. You know, they're, for all intents and purposes, they're homeless right now. They're on this quest, they've camped out for the night, and they're talking about what they want to do with that money
when they find it. Your share of the treasure.
Yeah, what are you going to do with your share of the treasure?
What are you going to do with your share of the treasure?
Go out west somewhere. Open a fine restaurant. I'm going to be the maitre d'. Greet all the swells. Go to work every day in a bow tie, tuxedo. And all the staff say yes, sir, and no, sir, and in a jiffy peep. And all my meals for free.
What about you, Dummer? What are you going to do with your share of that dough?
Going to visit them foreclosing son of a guns down at the Indianola Savings and Loan. Slap that money on the barrel head and buy back the family farm. You ain't no kind of man if you ain't got land. What about you, Evan? What you have in mind when you stole it in the first place?
I didn't have no plan.
Well, that hardly sound like you.
Mm-hmm. See, Pete, he wants to take
and
the money.
Repeat.
Oh, stop. He wants to take the money, open up a restaurant. He wants to, for one thing, he wants to serve people, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But he never wants to go hungry again.
Mm.
And hey, you know, they got this depression going on.
His cousin told him.
That's why I turned him in for the bounty.
Yeah.
He had to do it for he and his.
Yeah.
For him and his.
Yeah.
However you say that. Pete never wants to go hungry again. Delmar.
Repeat.
No. Delmar wants to buy back the family farm.
Mm-hmm.
But he further extrapolates that the reason for wanting to do that is so that he could be a man. As he says, you ain't no kind of man if you ain't got land. And that's just one of those core desires of that time. And Everett, unlike Pete and Delmar.
Repeat.
No, stop. he isn't so quick to express the real reason why he wants this treasure. Of course, it's only in retrospect that we realize that Everett never knocked over that truck. Everett wants something else. He just had to make this lie, this story, to convince Pete and Delmar.
No. Yes, I get it. Hey, I got a point.
You did not. Do not. Don't actually mark points. Don't do that. Oh, I'm surprised I haven't.
Episode 125.
I'm just glad I haven't. Even. I'm glad I haven't lost my point.
Oh, you lost a point the other day.
Facebook. Seven days without a pun makes 1 week. Just so you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's only in retrospect that we can see this scene and know what's really up.
Yeah.
And this is actually an example of what I would call true drama.
Oh.
Because we know, we as the audience know.
The hens are coming home to roost.
Yeah. We already know that Everett has no treasure. He sold these two on a bill of goods.
He made
them break the law even more. And has upped the ante on their bounty.
Yes.
And he's putting them through this because
Pete had 2 weeks left.
He had 2 weeks left.
Yep. And then, on his sentence.
Uh-huh. And then he could have gotten 15
years. Got sold a bill of goods. Mm-hmm. Led down the primrose path.
Yeah.
Bamboozled.
Yeah.
Hoodwinked.
Hoodwinked. There you go. Hogwalloped.
Oh, hey.
There you go. But we see how these characters value the abstract treasure as opposed to the physical treasure.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, you know, Pete never wants to go hungry again. That's a physical thing, but it's the idea that he's pursuing. It's the abstract idea. Hey, I'll never have to worry about anything again. Same thing for Delmar. We don't get a full picture of Everett's treasure until the end of the film.
Yeah.
Until he has that one moment where he actually, instead of short dealing God, instead of making God angry, let's talk about the real Odyssey. The reason why Homer, Odysseus was really sent out on his quest is because he kept making the gods mad.
Yeah.
He kept insulting them. He kept making them into fools. He kept speaking badly about them. So they said, hey, look, we gotta quiet this guy down. So we're going to strip him of his family. We're going to give his wife to another man.
Put a bunch of obstacles.
A bunch of obstacles in his path.
Yes.
You know, he's not bona fide.
No.
So let's kick him out.
Yep.
And his quest back, and Odysseus's and Everett's quest back to the family life is what really drives them. Their treasure is to be in the loving arms of their family.
Oh, goodness. Can I jump in for a little bit here?
Go ahead.
Because you're just saying some big things. There's one of the trivia parts on IMDb, and again, let's preface this by saying we don't know who put this on there. There's nothing to vouch for who's writing these bits of trivia, but the Odysseus insulted the gods.
Yeah.
What does that sound like? You know, see, Pete and Repeat,
Delmar
are looking for something even bigger than having a restaurant and serving people and being able to dress nice and make other people happy and this wonderful existence. Delmar is looking for something more than his physical land, his physical farm. He's looking much like Abraham was looking for that promised city, that heavenly city.
They're looking for a new identity.
Yes. Oh my goodness. And they can get that as they are chomping on Gopher.
As they're whatting on Gopher?
Yeah, chomping on Gopher because, you know, Repeat, he found him a whole village, Gopher Village.
Gopher Village.
But all of a sudden they're in the woods and all these people are coming down. It looks like a congregation and they're going down into the river and we have that, what's that? Allison Krauss.
Yeah. And Union something station. Yep. Union station.
As
something.
I went down to the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and Delmar sees what's happening to these people. They're being forgiven.
Delmar's been saved.
Well, that's it, boys.
been redeemed. The preacher done washed away all my sins and transgressions. It's a straight and narrow from here on out. And heaven everlasting's my reward.
Delbert, what are you talking about? We got bigger fish to fry.
The preacher said all my sins is washed away, including that Piggly Wiggly I knocked over in Yazoo.
I thought you said you was innocent of those charges.
Well, I was lying. And the preacher said that that sin's been washed away, too. Neither God nor man's got nothing on me now. Come on in, boys. The water is fine.
And there goes Pete, running in. Why? He wants that, too.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a burden on his back. And he lives in a city of destruction. Oh, wow. Now we not only Homer, but John Bunyan. Thank you, sir. We got Christian with his burden on his back, and these two men, they want that burden off.
Mm-hmm.
They got a lot of things to be forgiven of, and they know that they need to be forgiven. But we have Everett. Everett has a completely different outlook on all this stuff.
Preacher said it absolved him.
For him, not for the law. Surprised you, Pete. I gave you credit for more brains than Delmer.
But they was witnesses seen us redeemed.
That's not the issue, Delmer. Even if it did put you square with the Lord, the state of Mississippi's a little more hard-nosed.
You should have joined us, Everett. It couldn't have hurt none.
Hell, at least it would have washed away the stink of that pomade.
Join you two ignorant fools in a ridiculous superstition, thank you anyway, and I like the smell of my hair treatment. The pleasing odor's half the point.
Baptism. You two are just dumber than a bag of hammers.
Yeah. Yeah. He is like Odysseus, insulting God.
Mm-hmm.
All along, he really reminds me, Brendan, I just got to throw this out there. He reminds me of the religious leaders in Jesus' day.
Oh,
and you know, there's a case that could be made that many, you know, some people say that the Sadducees were flat out atheists.
Hey.
They didn't believe in a God. This was just culture for them. And they were in a place of power. The Pharisees, maybe they believed in God,
mm-hmm.
but they kept them at bay. Hey, we're doing fine here. We got this great racket going on. Everything's mm-hmm. wonderful here. And Jesus, what about his lament over the city of Jerusalem in Matthew 23, verses 37 through 39, out of the NET, the New English Translation? Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets and stone those who are sent to you. That sounds like Everett.
Mm-hmm.
How often, Jesus says, I have longed to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you would have none of it. Look, your house is left to you desolate. Oh, that's some foreshadowing in this film, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow. For I tell you, you will not see me from now until you say, blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord. But what if we back up a little bit in that same chapter, Matthew 23, verses 12 through 13, out of the NASB, the New American Standard Bible. Whoever exalts himself shall be humbled.
Hey.
And whoever humbles himself shall be exalted. But woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because, listen, Everett, you shut off the kingdom of heaven from people. He's calling these guys, you guys are dumb as a bag of hammers, all this superstition and all this stuff.
The spiritual mumbo jumbo.
Yes! You shut off the kingdom of heaven from people, for you do not enter in yourselves, nor do you allow those who are entering to go in. Those who are entering, you bar them. Mm-hmm. Jump in there. Ah! Pull them back out. That's what Everett's doing this whole entire time. And, well, then it's not the catharsis.
Climax.
Take it away.
Where are we at?
Well, where did you leave off?
I left off, at Everett's prayer.
Yes.
Yes.
Because the Odyssey has found their way all the way to the very cusp of him getting the treasure that he was seeking.
True. And as Well, let's take it back to the concert that's in the film.
Okay.
Okay, let's go. I needed a frame of reference in the film. Even at the concert, even after the concert, you know, Homer Stokes has been carried away on the whatever that thing is, that big log that they bring in.
Yeah.
And as he's exiting with his wife, it's still kind of left ambiguous, you know, as to whether or not they're going to.
Is he really bona fide?
Yeah. Is he? That's still the question. Yeah. You know, I don't know if
he's already been pardoned.
Yeah.
All three of them have been pardoned.
They've been officially pardoned by the Deus Ex Machina of this story, Pappy O'Daniel.
Oh, really? The God in the machine,
the
huh?
The God that steps in and saves the day for the characters.
The Eucatastrophe? Hey. As Tolkien would...
Hey.
I didn't even think of that. Wow.
Hey.
You know why? Because, I mean, you look at the character of Pappy O'Daniel, you go, how can you attach anything redeeming to this guy?
See, that's part of my listener challenge, but more on that later.
Okay.
More on that later. I mean, you just can't run Reform on an incumbent, you know? You know, we as America just saw. Anyway. Oh, too soon.
Strike that from the record.
Too soon.
Too soon. You just lost your point.
Oh, man. Nope. I'm going to be in the negative. So, I'm going to be in the hole. It's not, well, hey, if we're playing golf, negative's good, right?
Oh, sure.
Anyway, it's not until... It's after the concert. It's after, you know, his wife still doesn't know if he's bona fide or not. She's not ready to make that recommitment. But they get to the shed. They get to the home. And who's there waiting for him?
The devil.
The devil himself.
Mm-hmm.
The devil himself. He's waiting for them with these nooses. He's caught them, finally, after this whole film. He had Pete at one time.
And nobody's going to save him out of this.
No. Well, no, nobody can.
Yeah.
Except. Nobody can save them except God.
Yeah. The other.
The other. Mm-hmm. This is complete mystery. It's a mystery, especially to Everett, because he can't logically understand it. He can't logically discourse.
He's a man of science.
He's a man of science. He's out. He's done with
the
mumbo jumbo. He's very Greek in his way of thinking.
Well, and like them French.
Yeah, like they had the revolution in France. But let's listen to this prayer, because this for this character, this is the only time in the film.
The roosters have come home.
And he has to deal with it.
Yes.
And the prayer is his way of processing those hens, those chicks.
Please look down and recognize us, poor sinner. Please, Lord. I just want to see my daughters again. I've been separated from my family for so long. I know I've been guilty of pride and sharp dealing. I'm sorry that I turned my back on you, Lord. Forgive me. But help us, Lord. For the sake of my family. For Tommy's sake. And for Delmer's and Pete's. Let me see my daughters again, Lord. Help us. Please.
His treasure the whole time has been the love of his family, has been the love of his wife, the love of his daughters. He's been seeking this treasure for the whole film, but he can't get to it when he's insulting God, when he's making God into a fool, when he's throwing all this stuff that at God. It's keeping him back. He's elevating himself. He's exalting himself and humbling God. And you can't do that.
That's my key verse.
Oh.
My key verse is Proverbs 21, verse 30, out of the NRSV, the New Revised Standard Version. Proverbs 21, 30, no wisdom, no understanding, no counsel can avail against the Lord.
Mm-mm, it can't.
What's he doing? Is he repenting?
I'm choosing to believe that he actually is.
Okay.
And in this brief moment, and only because he's about to die. And people have been known to be very repentant on their deathbeds.
There's no atheists in foxholes, right?
Yeah.
And that's the old saying.
Yeah. And even after the flood comes through.
Yeah.
Even after he's twisting and turning in this underworld, underwater,
Baptism. The one that he
said was as dumb as Bag of Hammers.
Yes.
Or that he accused his friends of being
superstition.
And I really, like I said, I really love seeing Everett twist and turn in the water.
Being tossed to and fro.
Yeah.
By a power other.
Realizing that he doesn't have any control over it.
Yes.
And that's one of his things throughout the film is he wants to maintain control.
Mm.
He has to keep lying to Pete and Delmar about this treasure. He has to keep wheeling and dealing.
Yep. Shucking and jiving and all that stuff.
All the stuff
he's got a buddy that can write him up a dentistry license. Yeah. And
but all the stuff that he confesses
in
the prayer
of
shortchanging and, and all that stuff. And just through that, we really see, again, my key verse, just to simplify, verse 21 in Matthew 6, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also.
Yeah.
His treasure was with his family his whole time. And arguably, he, in a weird non-Christian way, he is redeemed in that he gets his family in the end.
Oh, does he?
In a non-Christian way.
That
he's rejoined. That's why I'm saying he's rejoined to his family.
All right.
Now he's not. I wouldn't consider that he's redeemed with God because right after the prayer, right after the flood, let's listen.
A miracle. It was a miracle.
Elmer, don't be ignorant. I told you they was flooding this valley.
No, that ain't it.
We prayed to God and he pitied us.
Well, it never fails. Once again, you two hayseeds are showing how much you want for intellect. There's a perfectly scientific explanation for what just happened.
That ain't the tune you was singing back there at the gallows.
Well, any human being will cast about in a moment of stress. No, the fact is they're flooding this valley so they can hydroelectric up the whole darn state. Yes, sir, South is gonna change. Everything's going to be put on electricity and run on a paying basis. Out with the old spiritual mumbo-jumbo, the superstitions, and the backward ways. We're going to see a brave new world where they run everybody a wire and hook us all up to a grid. Yes, sir. A veritable age of reason, like the one they had in France. Not a moment too soon. Not a moment too soon.
And that was a brief cowbell that you heard because just as the old blind prophet said at the very beginning of the film, you will see a cow on the roof of a cotton house.
Absolutely.
And he sees that and it jars him.
Yeah, because you know why? He has already repented from his repentance.
Yeah,
he's already turned back. And it's much like John the Baptist in Matthew chapter 3, verses 7 through 8, out of the net. But when he saw many Pharisees and Sadducees coming to his baptism, he said to them, "You offspring of vipers, who warned you to flee from the wrath to come? Therefore, produce fruit that proves your repentance." Everett, immediately, he's miraculously saved through this event from this wrath. It was a wrath that came through. The valley was flooded. And then he turns again back to his old ways. Produce fruit that proves your repentance. Remember, Proverbs 21, verse 30, no wisdom, Everett, no understanding, no counsel of yours, Everett, can avail against the Lord. And that is the story of Odysseus in the Odyssey. Mm-hmm. Because what happens, he goes back and yes, he's with his wife and his girls, but she says, "I need that ring." Well, it's at the bottom of a 9-hectare. Like, I don't care if it's 90 hectares. Mm-hmm. I counted to 3. Guess where he's going next? He's going to find that ring. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Why, Brendan? Because he continuously insults God. He will not enter into the kingdom of heaven. He shuts it off from other people. He won't go in, nor will he allow Everett and Pete to go in.
Mm-hmm.
He is insulting God. And so this is a great morality tale. See what Everett does?
Mm-hmm.
Don't do that. What else? Do you have anything else? Questions, no. Comments, piggybacks, editorials, off-the-wall remarks?
Man, I think we milked it for all it's worth.
Oh, my goodness. What a great movie. But here's the question that I have for our listener challenge. Who, when he prayed that prayer and that flood came, who did it come to save? Did it come to save Everett out of this situation, or did it come to save Delmar and Pete and Repeat? Was it sent on their behalf or on his? There's a thought experiment. I mean, God knows. God knows. He's not going to be mocked.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it a chance? Here's your chance. I hear your prayer. Here's your chance. But what Christian themes did y'all find in it? Brendan?
And here's my question.
Okay.
What are the Coen brothers trying to say about God, if they're trying to say anything about him at all?
At all.
Because, like I said, I think, just after me watching the film several times, Pappy O'Daniel is the God, is the physical manifestation of God in this story. Because, I mean, Deus Ex Machina literally means, like you said, yeah, God in the machine. And the machine and that term referred to the actual theatrical device that would lower the actor who was playing a god in a certain play. He would drop in, literally, and fix
do God stuff.
Yeah, do God stuff, and he would tie everything up, and then he would be lifted back up out of the play. And that's, you know, that speaks to the way Greeks believed that God
operated
with, or that the gods,
was the economy,
that the gods worked within the world.
Yeah.
It's a very abrasive, very
human,
very human way of understanding.
But it's also like a deistic, but yet they will pop in.
Yeah,
but most of the time they're just watching.
They'll pop in when they want to.
Yeah,
when they
notice something might be going on.
When the watch stops working the way it's supposed to.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, gotta go down and fix something real quick.
Yeah,
I'll be back.
Yeah, exactly.
I might bring a wife with me.
And Pappy O'Daniel, hey. Or I might just get a new one while I'm down here. You know what I mean? Pappy O'Daniel is that plot device that pardons the boys from their sins against the state.
Yeah.
Not against God, against the state. But as we've already talked about, Pappy O'Daniel is a loathsome, foul-mouthed, embarrassing character to watch. And props to the actor for doing it. But hey, I mean, that's what actors do.
Yep.
If the Coen brothers see Pappy O'Daniel as the God figure, and they've implanted this story into the Christian culture, not necessarily the faith, but the culture, is there a difference? Is there what are? Well, maybe I'm digging too deep for myself. But what are they trying to say about God? If they're trying to say anything at all, that's my question. What do you think?
And it's time for some feedback, and as we are wont to do, let's go on down to, where are we going?
It is I,
Martha.
No! No, it is not! It is patron Saint Philip is going to take us down to King Philip's Stables of Doom. He left us a comment on The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey, Encouragement and Love. That was Finding Christ in Cinema 124, which you can listen to at christincinema.com.
He says, "Hey guys, congratulations on wrapping up the Hobbit trilogy. I haven't seen this one in quite a while and have been holding out to see the extended edition, and I'm glad Michael gives it a good report." Which, by the way, I didn't realize that the DVD copy that I had was the extended edition.
Well, there you go.
So there you go. So, okay. Hey, I'm in on the party too.
Don't
leave me out.
We're all cool.
Back to Philip. He says, "When I look for a Christian theme in this trilogy, one that stands out the most is the recruitment of Bilbo by Gandalf. We are quick to evaluate and judge others based on outward appearance or in light of these things that this world places great value on, such as physical beauty or strength, financial wealth, power, and influence.
Yeah.
A hobbit like Bilbo isn't particularly impressive with these things in mind, and the genius of Tolkien's writing is that he makes these hobbits so identifiable with his readers."
Oh, stay tuned for another show, dear listeners.
Yep, hobbits are known for being unadventurous folk, who enjoy homely surroundings and appreciating the simple things of life. Yet when called upon and shown the importance of a task, Bilbo is quite capable and actually essential to the success of the dwarves' mission. I'm reminded of Samuel's anointing of young David as king of Israel. 1 Samuel 16, verse 7, the latter part, part B, tells us, quote, God does not view things the way men do. People look on the outward opinion, the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart, end quote, out of the NET. It's crucial for me to remind myself that I need not to be what the world considers a great man to be of use to God, and that God does not look at me the same way the world does. Thanks for the show, guys. Hashtag
MoweLabGimlab.
Excellent thoughts, as always, from our patron, St. Philip, which ties right in, Brendan, to our
well-mannered frivolity.
Thank you, Minerva. To let everybody know, the Secret Fire Podcast
is on the way, is underway.
It's live now.
Hey.
We have our very first episode, the introduction episode, so it's episode zero. It was our placeholder. It was a way for me to quickly get the Secret Fire Podcast into the iTunes store. We're in Google Play Music store. We're on Stitcher Radio, and we are on whatever podcatchers that you prefer to use. Still waiting on word back from TuneIn Radio. So that's all that we're waiting for. And that's it. The big reveal. The Secret Fire Podcast. And we explain exactly where the name for the podcast came from on that introductory episode, which you can find at gctnetwork.com. Or if you go to secretfirepodcast.com, it will take you directly to the Secret Fire Podcast episodes. But we are available wherever you get your podcasts. So go and subscribe. Leave us a 5-star review. Help us get noticed in the stores, and especially the iTunes store. That's still the number one place where podcasts come from. Even if you use a podcatcher that isn't iTunes, they get the feed from iTunes.
Like one that I've started to use, Podcast Republic.
Yes.
So there you go.
That was actually, we got that from a listener to the Secret Fire Podcast. And we are going to be recording episode number one immediately after Finding Christ in Cinema, this very episode. And Philip, the comments that you made about hobbits and their character is exactly what we're going to talk about as we discuss the prologue to The Lord of the Rings.
You think some of our listeners are starting to be drift compatible with us?
Hey, that's what Christians do.
It's a neural isn't it? Handshake.
That was the whole point of our whole point in Pacific Rim. Yep.
Getting ready, you go. Getting ready for the sequel.
SecretFirePodcast.com. The Matchmaker opened last night.
Hey.
Three of my kids are in that. And, you know, Micah, my son, is. We had him as a guest on last week's episode. He is the third co-host on the Secret Fire Podcast. That's why we are recording this on Saturday instead of Friday, because he had opening night last night. He's got it. And then they're going to do their second night tonight. But anyway, The Matchmaker, I'm going to see it tonight and looking forward to giving you a report on that next week.
Well,
hey, Brendan, do you happen to have a Lost update for us this week?
Oh, do I ever. Oh, just hearing it.
Last week, I'm Lost.
Oh, previously.
Yeah, previously, I'm Lost.
Oh, man. So Ben.
Yes?
Is conniving his way into wrangling the Oceanic Six back together.
Getting the boys are back in town, getting the band back together.
What you said. And hey, Jen is alive after the freighter exploded.
What?
Except he's not in the same time.
What?
That he is. Well, because the island's like a record that skips. You know, it goes back and resets all the time. And he's met someone. He was rescued.
Uh-huh.
By a French team of sorts.
Uh-huh. Jacques Cousteau.
No, not Cousteau, but Rousseau.
Oh, Jacques Rousseau.
No, Daniel Rousseau. Who is on the island again after dying, after being killed by those militants that came through working for Charles Widmore.
Oh, goodness, who's this Charles Widmore that you speak of?
Well,
are you excited?
Who
what season
he?
Are you in right now?
I'm in four? Five.
You're
I'm
in five.
Five.
I'm
in five.
Wow.
Yeah. Like I think I talked about it last episode. The season lengths have gotten drastically shorter. because seasons 1, 2, and 3, hey, they were 25 episodes apiece. Mm. 4 and 5 is fit only like 14 episodes.
Oh, wow.
So it's wrapping up quick, man. But besides that, yes. I got the new semester for school starting.
Oh, okay.
Which we're reading, you know, last semester we read Oedipus Rex by Sophocles. Now we're reading the Roman iteration by Seneca. Getting into that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to be very interested in hearing the differences in the retelling.
Okay.
So keep us up to date on that.
Sure. And hey, Michael, there's going to be a special announcement at the end of the month. And that's all I'm saying.
Oh my goodness.
That's all I'm saying.
So you want to stay tuned for that?
I keyed you into it last week.
Uh-huh.
Post-podcasts.
You did?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll probably end up reminding you.
Yes, you will.
So, but hey, I got a lightning round.
Okay, there we go. The lightning round!
Last night,
yes,
Sir Richard the Lionheart and I, FCC's very own, went to go see Martin Scorsese's brand new, spanking new film that's a month old already, Silence.
That's with Kylo Ren.
With Adam Driver.
And Spider-Man.
With Andrew Garfield, Liam Neeson.
FCC's very own Liam Neeson.
Liam Neeson. FCC's very own
Adam Driver.
Adam Driver, yeah. Too. But, man.
How was it?
Oh, man.
But not good enough for a Monday movie review.
No.
No.
Of course not. Nothing is. Nothing is.
Do you recommend that people see this?
Oh, so much. If it's, and it's, like I said, it's been out since December, but it only just got nationally released last weekend.
Okay, so you are recommending that listeners to FCC go and see Martin Scorsese's Silence.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give them something to keep in mind, like a pre-nugget, something to go in with?
Well, just
a question or a thought or anything? Or would it be given away?
I know the question.
Can you plant a seed?
I know the question that I walked away with.
Uh-huh.
But let me sell it first a little bit.
Okay.
So it's the story that follows two Jesuit priests.
You know, this is lightning round.
I know. Okay. Sorry. Well, the timer's not up, so how am I going
to No, we're way past the show.
Oh, no.
Oh, great.
We ended.
They can't hear us.
It's about two Jesuit priests from Portugal, Adam Driver and Andrew Garfield, who go to Japan to seek out another Jesuit priest who has been rumored to have apostatized, who has given up the faith because he's not strong enough. And Michael, Andrew and Adam, their character names, Rodriguez and Garupe, you know, they feel it's their duty to go and save him from his...
correct an erring brother.
Yes. To correct his sin.
To win him back.
Yeah, to win him back. And they feel it's their duty.
I mean, that's what Paul talks about.
And you know, the question I walked away with is... would I have done what they had done? It's very...
Okay.
And like, apparently Martin Scorsese has this thing about having a lot of blood and violence in his films, you know, having done quite a few gangster films. And this one, the blood's not so heavy. There is, unfortunately, a decapitation that you see, very graphically.
They didn't do it with a real person, though.
No.
Okay, good.
I hope not. No real persons were harmed in the making of this film.
No real heads were lost.
But hey, that's my question for the film, though. Would I have done what they did?
Okay. So there is a thought study.
Whew, man.
Ooh, okay. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing that film. But what's coming up on Finding Christ in Cinema?
Oh, well, next week, hey, look, we want to continue this trend of occasionally touching a classic.
Yes!
A silver screen classic of yesteryear, as it were. And we got to hit To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh.
So that's what we're doing next week. That, and then after Tequila Mockingbird, we're going to hit K-Pax.
Okay.
And we're
hit it hard.
We're going to hit, Kevin Spacey. Is he?
No, he's not yet. See, he will be.
The perfect film.
Adam to the menagerie.
And then.
Adam to the driver.
Adam who?
Yeah.
Adam, no, Adam.
Adam. Oh, yes.
Adam. And then, hey, we're doing Super 8.
Okay.
We got to get into these, to all these weird sci-fi flicks that we've been thrown at.
Yes.
And
we have been neglecting for far too long.
And then, yeah. And then, hey, after that, we might as well hit Sully. Because after all, this is Finding Christ in Tom Hanks films.
It is. So. And after all, Finding Christ in Cinema is live in the GCT Network studio each Friday, Lord willing, unless it's Saturday. like today, at around 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Join us for live video and especially chat using the chat room and video player at gctnetwork.com/live. Finding Christ in Cinema is part of the Great Commission Transmission Network, a listener-supported ministry using new media and social networking to equip and encourage you to go into all the world and proclaim the good news to everyone. To find out more and to partner with us, visit us at gctnetwork.com/donate. To witness the firepower of this fully armed and operational digital ministry, including all 125 episodes of Finding Christ in Cinema, and links to our social media profiles, visit our website at christincinema.com. You can send us email. Just address it to fcc@gctnetwork.com.
Oh, you can call us up on the voice line at 507-407-GCTN.
Uh-huh.
And if that number doesn't work,
because creepy little monkey.
I guess the air got to it or something.
The air?
The air got to it!
Call us on our emergency-only backup line at 507-407-4286. Now, let's just say you want to listen to the good old podcast.
I do!
You can go to iTunes.
Yes.
You can go to Stitcher. You can go to TuneIn Radio. But if those three wombats...
No, not those three wombats. No way.
Because this is not
some cute technology like the Iron Man suit.
You can now go to Google Play Music and search them all for Finding Christ in Cinema.
Being me has its privileges.
And for all the shows that we produce here at the Great Commission Transmission Network, including our brothers in Texas,
The Theonauts!
And our brand new Tolkien podcast, The Secret Fire Podcast, get over to our official website at gctnetwork.com. Mr. Brendan Taylor, anything else?
Nah, we good.
We good?
Yeah.
And that is a wrap!
Well, who wants to write a gorilla book?
Movies are the most powerful influence ever created.
Oh, I see. Pretty good.
I thought she was talking in tongues or something.
You are tuned in to the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission. This is your Great Commission transmission.
At gctnetwork.com.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
All right, here's the situation. We're going to record us an episode of Finding Christ in Cinema.
Is you is, or is you ain't, my constituents.
Is now, you is, or is you ain't gonna do this show in under an hour.
These boys is miscegenated.